earth turns into a dandelion clock whose fragile seeds are blown away by a gust of wind. BBC Natural World. A shady trail through thick undergrowth.
Think of African elephants, and most of us will picture open savanna, where the largest land mammal mingles with lions, giraffes, and gazelles.
A chimp lowers itself down a tree trunk to the forest floor.
In fact, a third of Africa's elephants live here, in dense, dark rainforests.
A huge grey wrinkled foot.
Forest elephants stand just 2 meters at the shoulder, are more slightly built, and have pinker tusks than those on the savannah. Little else was known about them until one remarkable woman began eavesdropping on their lives. Andrea Tocarlo is no ordinary scientist. By living alone in remote jungle, she's learnt more about these hidden giants than anyone else on Earth.
Andrea watches an elephant plod through undergrowth.
This has placed a huge burden on her shoulders. Forest elephants are now under greater threat than their savannah cousins. But Andrea could be in a unique position to help them. She's learnt their language and understands what they're thinking. She can even hear when they're in trouble. Incredibly, she believes that if we listen carefully enough, they might tell us what they need to survive.
Forest Elephants, Rumbles in the Jungle. Narrated by Richard Armitage. A forest clearing.
The only thing most scientists see of forest elephants is what they leave behind.
A monkey studies some elephant dung.
Counting dung piles has been the crude way of guessing how many there are.
Moving through dense rainforest.
Their real secrets are hidden away in the vast rainforest that stretches over the Congo Basin.
Flying above a vast tree canopy. From a distance, a clearing appears as a tiny bald patch in an endless sea of green.
But in a small corner of the Central African Republic, there is a window into their lives.
Closer to, the clearing consists of a series of muddy pools.
This is Zangabai. A vast natural clearing and a mecca for forest elephants.
An adult elephant leads its young in single file to one of the pools.
The forest provides all the food they need. So what is it that draws them out of the shadows?
More elephants lumber out of the encircling forest.
The clearing contains a vital ingredient that's lacking in their diet.
An elephant with long tusks treads eagerly through the mud.
Volcanic rocks lie close to the surface, and the salts they contain neutralize toxins ingested with rainforest leaves and bark.
A broad view of elephants gathering in the clearing.
Generations of elephants have come here to prospect for these minerals and settle their stomachs.
An elephant sinks its long trunk into one of the pools, and the surface erupts with bubbling brown water. Other elephants do the same. One elephant submerges its trunk almost up to its eyes.
Blowing down, they churn up the mud, then take a mouthful of the mineral-enriched waters.
Curling back its trunk into its mouth, an elephant takes a long drink of water. A baby elephant copies the adult.
As soon as they've mastered their trunks, they're hooked. It may be that these mineral salts are also vital for the elephant's growth and fertility, which is why as many as 3,000 elephants visit Zanga each year. Zangabai is not the only clearing where they can get these salts, but it's certainly one of the biggest and most frequented.
An elephant chases another out of a pool, helping it along with a hefty push from behind.
When Andrea Carlo first came here, she had an instinct that this place could help her unlock the secret lives of forest elephants.
An elephant slowly withdraws its trunk from a pool.
I knew immediately that this was an extraordinary place because to see wildlife in the open in the forest is literally impossible. I went there first in 1987 just to see the place and actually slept there. And all night there were these extraordinary elephant sounds because elephants don't sleep like we do. There was just this symphony of elephants. And in the morning, they were still there. And it was obvious that this was probably one of the most special places for them in the Congo Basin.
A sweeping view of elephants gathered at the clearing.
Andrea now understands what the symphony means. She can even hear an individual elephant's voice. But back then, she was faced with a huge problem. Each elephant visits for just a few hours, at best, a few days. So Andrea only had snapshots to go on.
A baby elephant's nudged aside, then an adult elephant backing away from another. A mother nuzzling its baby with its trunk, and a deer being chased away from the clearing. A male and female entwine trunks. Then Andrea watches through binoculars as the bull mounts the female.
She might not see them again for months or years. From this constantly changing cast of characters, how could Andrea work out the big picture? There was another challenge. Andrea wasn't a trained scientist. But she had been a teacher in the Bronx, one of New York's toughest neighborhoods, and she was single-minded enough to commit herself long-term.
A man pushes a wheelbarrow laden with wood along a track to a thatched hut. Andrea hangs out washing on a line.
She left her family and friends and set herself up in the middle of nowhere.
The hut is one of a cluster of thatched structures in a small clearing.
At the beginning, I can honestly say there were a lot of things I was afraid of. I wasn't real comfortable in the dark. You're always in contact with insects, and that was something I didn't like. But if you're going to stay here, you have to get used to that, and you have to deal with it, and that's what I did.
Andrea saws a plank of wood.
Andrea's had to turn her hand to everything, building a camp from scratch and surviving on minimal creature comforts.
Two small black and white monkeys watch the activity below them.
She's also had to place her trust in the local Bayaka pygmies. They come from an ancient tribe who have always lived in this forest. They have helped her to adapt.
A man hammers a nail into a square wooden frame.
Every day, Andrea sets off with her loyal helpers on the 45-minute walk to the bay.
Treading through murky water.
It's a routine she's stuck to for 20 years.
As Andrea approaches the clearing, a few elephants are already at the pools. One flaps an ear across its eye as Andrea studies them through binoculars.
Even though Andrea sees individuals only rarely, she's been able to piece together their life stories.
Andrea sits on a branch at the edge of the clearing.
She couldn't have reached this extraordinary position without first learning how to pick out faces from the crowd. By mid-afternoon, the crowd can be 140 strong. To keep track of so many individuals, Andrea drew pictures of their ears, which get ripped and torn in distinctive ways as they move through the jungle.
Pale markings like trickles of paint distinguish one elephant's ears.
She had over 4,000 identity cards before she realized her phenomenal memory was taking over.
Another elephant with similar but more profusive paint drip markings.
think the big breakthrough was when you realized you knew the elephants, you felt empowered. You could just go out there and look, and you knew them. Like you would see someone on the street in your hometown and recognize them.
Now, her encyclopedic mind holds details of countless unfolding family sagas.
From behind, an elephant gently strokes the rump of another with the tip of its trunk.
During the hours she spends at the Bai, she notes all the arrivals, and crucially, who greets whom. It's late afternoon, and Andrea has noticed two related elephants who've arrived from different parts of the forest.
This is Mimi One, who's the matriarch of this group. Mimi One knows that Mimi Two is there. Yeah, they're heading right towards each other. There we go. There's a nice greeting going on right now. Some very low frequency. Yeah, now they're trunking each other. Yeah. Yep. That's a mother and daughter. So some of these greetings are very subtle. And if you know the individuals, then you can predict them.
By understanding these relationships, Andrea's made an important discovery. In the forest beyond the Bai, it's rare to see more than one elephant at a time. People assumed they led solitary, independent lives. Andrea believes that even though relatives might not stay together in the forest, they do appear to know each other's whereabouts.
An elephant splashes its face with water.
I think it was the general misconception about forest elephants only having small family groups.
But they do have extensive networks, and they should, because, I mean, we know that about savanna elephants. Why shouldn't forest elephants still maintain these social groups?
Zanga Bai, as well as offering medicinal salts, appears to be an important venue for elephant family reunions. Andrea is beginning to understand why the Baiaka call this place the Village of Elephants. But even the Baiaka don't understand how the elephants appear to second-guess each other's movements. How they know when other family members will be at the Bai.
The Bai is shrouded in a misty curtain of torrential rain.
To get to the bottom of this, Andrea has had to start thinking like an elephant. Tuning into this forest world as they do.
Trudging slowly past another, an elephant appears dispirited by the downpour. The atmosphere at the Bai in the teeming rain seems more subdued. Blurry black and white footage of the Bai in a storm, the elephants appearing as vague dark shapes illuminated by random camera flash bursts of lightning.
It's at night, when they're visible only by starlight, that the elephants are at their most sociable and most vocal. It's also when Andrea is most worried for them. Huge reunions out in the open place forest elephants in grave danger. Every year, 1 in 10 of Zanga's elephants is taken by poachers.
Grainy black and white footage of a mother with its baby. Daylight. A flock of birds takes flight across the Bai.
Andrea's no longer here just to study them. She feels a growing duty to protect them.
A herd of horned kudus is already at the Bai as elephants start to arrive. Andrea and two men climb some steps leading to a covered wooden platform.
She believes their conversations are rich in meaning and that one way to help is to listen to what they're saying. Today, she's adding to her vocabulary. And to get a better view of the clearing, she's working from a viewing platform.
We're up pretty high. I think we're up about maybe 7 meters.
and you can see one end of the bay from the other. And you see all the entrances to the bay, so I'm able to keep track of all the individuals that come in.
From up here, she can compile a kind of elephant phrasebook, which links particular behavior to the calls they make.
What I'm doing is I'm trying to capture vocal sequences between elephants in the clearing in order to build up an elephant lexicon, what these vocalizations mean. Because I know the individuals, I can also anticipate these vocal events.
She peers through the viewfinder of a video camera mounted on a tripod.
Someone's lost. It's probably a juvenile lost its family.
Andrea slips on a pair of headphones, then adjusts some settings on a small box.
An elephant's hearing is phenomenal. They can hear much deeper sounds than we can. Technology is helping Andrea to record these very low-frequency calls that are normally inaudible to humans.
Yeah, Milo's checking in with this female. She's doing a very nice rumble. Elephants often do that when a female's being checked out by a male. They do this low rumble.
Andrea can now identify 10 different types of call. She's even discovered that each family has a distinctive voice.
A small calf.
Oh, separated from its mother.
An elephant hurries towards it.
Oh, the mother's coming. Here comes the mother. Mother hears the baby crying. There she is. She's vocalizing. There's a lot of low frequency going on now, reassuring the calf. And probably the calf is learning the family's specific calls.
The calf suckles on its mother's teats. Nighttime.
Back in camp, Andrea can analyze the recordings and start to see the pattern of each elephant call.
This is a clip that I've pulled off. It's to illustrate the distress call in a young calf. And it's crying. And it makes this sort of very low, mournful sound. And what you'll see next in the tape is the response of two young subadult females. They approach the calf, and then they discover each other. And this looks like a small greeting. But then they go back and follow the calf, who's probably heard from its mother in the meantime and is approaching its mother.
Each sound recording gets turned into a spectrogram, giving Andrea a detailed picture of the call.
This is the calf's call, and then you have these very low frequency calls here. I mean, you definitely see the calf calling, you see the mouth open, but to know who's making those low frequency calls is difficult. But because the calf turned around and went in the other direction, I would assume it's the mother, and it recognized its mother's voice, and now it's approaching its mother. If you collected enough of these distress calls of calves of a certain age, you could compare them to see if this is your typical distress call.
Andrea has developed an amazing skill. By learning their language, she can interpret what they're doing.
This is a greeting between three members of the same family. They're all vocalizing. They've all recognized each other, and they've all grouped together, and you see the ears are flapping, and they're trunking each other, and they're very excited to be together again. So I assume that they were separated for a bit of time because of the energy involved in their vocalizations.
Their rumbles can travel over a mile through dense vegetation. Even though family members are spread out, they can hear an invitation to meet up.
Part of the call is inaudible to our ear, it's infrasonic, but a lot of it is audible, and that's what we're hearing. But these low frequencies are the ones that travel the farthest through the forest. So, I mean, if they're having this greeting and there are, like, individuals related to them in the nearby forest, they're going to hear it. And a lot of times you see other members of their family show up.
If their social networking is this powerful, they might even be able to warn each other of danger.
On screen, three elephants huddle close to each other. Flying over the forest's misty treetops, then an obscured view of the Bai through trees and vegetation.
The following morning, the Bai is eerily quiet.
He's saying that he's found blood on the trail and there's a lot of elephant tracks.
Days like this remind Andrea how vulnerable these elephants are.
You can see blood right here. He ran here, but you can see tracks all around him. There's more here. Don't look way tall and slow. More here. So you can actually see where the elephant has trampled earth. He's probably panicking. And he looks pretty big. You can see track right here. Pretty big male. That's the track of the front leg.
Most forest elephants have tusks. The biggest adults carry the most ivory.
This is a big patch of coagulated blood. It's pretty fresh, so it was from this night. And there's also a track. Now they're saying it might be a female. Where we are now is only about probably 30 meters from the Bai. But we suspect the elephant was probably shot on the other side and ran, because we didn't hear any gunshot in the night. And generally, somebody will hear a gun if it goes off.
Men scour the ground.
Zanga Bai is within a national park, so all Andrea can do is report the incident to forest guards.
All eyes are fixed firmly on the forest floor for more clues.
It's a hard place to police, but Andrea's very presence in the area does make events like this less frequent than they'd otherwise be. Andrea wants local people to understand the value of elephants, not just as intelligent, interesting animals, but because in their secret wanderings, elephants influence the shape and richness of the forest itself.
Soaring over a luxuriant tree canopy, then moving through thick vegetation at ground level.
The richer they make the forest, the more food there is for everyone. The most obvious way they do this is by engineering pathways through the tangle of vegetation.
A clearly delineated trail path.
Over time, elephant feet have created wide trails, highways, that run for hundreds of miles through the forest and which link key resources.
At one point, a path forks.
Their trails are used by many other animals.
Climbing a tree.
Western lowland gorillas eat the same kinds of fruit as elephants, so elephant paths are like signposts to food.
A gorilla eases itself out onto a slim branch, then chomps casually on a large, round, green-skinned fruit. A baby elephant follows its mother through the forest.
But there's one type of fruit that only the elephants can get to.
Resembling a large potato,
Omphalocarpum fruits are encased in a tough shell, making them virtually impossible to crack.
After rolling it around in its mouth for a few moments, the mother spits it out.
Elephants have the perfect tool for the job.
Spearing the fruit with a tusk, she then throws it on the ground and spears it again, slicing it cleanly in half. She picks up one half with her trunk and pops it in her mouth.
They may devour everything, but the seeds of all the fruits they eat pass unharmed through the gut.
On a forest trail.
As they travel, the elephants replant the seeds, creating avenues of their favourite fruit trees.
A forest clearing.
Where there's a lot of elephant activity, areas open up and sedges and grasses can take hold.
A gorilla strolls through thick, lush grass with a baby clinging to its back.
They are fundamental to the gorilla's diet. These great apes would find life much harder without the elephants. It's now the dry season, one of the busiest, and for Andrea, one of the most fascinating times at the Bai. It's when most of the big bulls show up.
An elephant swings a foot through a pool. The elephant has three notches on its left ear.
This is Triple Bite. Over the years, Andrea has watched him grow from an adolescent into one of the most dominant bulls in the clearing.
Andrea's watching from the viewing platform.
But he hasn't been here for nearly a year. He has travelled hundreds of miles to reach Zanga, where he knows he can find females.
Andrea lowers her binoculars to make some notes in a book.
It's not just the females that sense the tension rippling across the Bai when the big males arrive.
That's going to be five, chasing Sitatunga.
For the younger bulls especially, this can be a very exciting time.
The young elephants, they come in, they're very feisty. And they'll just run around the Bai for the entire afternoon. He's like a young male in puberty. So he's learning how to be a male.
Having chased away a kudu, the young bull splashes cockily across the Bai, shaking its head and flapping its ears.
Unlike on the savannah, elephants rarely see each other in the forest.
An elephant strokes another's back with its trunk.
This clearing offers rare moments of contact, time for the bulls to get to know each other and learn each other's strengths.
Two bulls lock tusks and one forces the other backwards.
And everything they do is copied by the youngsters.
With only tiny stumps for tusks, the youngsters engage in a similar duel by entwining trunks.
Sort of like a schoolyard. Elephants are so much like humans. We learn to be human. We end up being socialized, and elephants undergo the same process.
Andrea calls this bull school, a time and place to learn their position in elephant society.
When I started the study, I had no idea about how conscious they were. And yes, they do have good memories and they have personalities. And watching an elephant grow from childhood to adulthood has been astonishing to see the changes and how much they really have to learn to become an elephant.
Understanding the central importance of Zanga Bai places an even bigger burden on Andrea's shoulders. Her presence here is not just preventing elephant deaths, but the possible disruption of their entire way of life. Elephant meat is a delicacy, but it's rarely on the menu. They are hard to kill with a normal shotgun. And Andrea's work is making a difference.
When I first started working with the Bayaka, I think we all have this vision that they know the wildlife, but they didn't know elephants in the way that they've gotten to know them with me.
But because now they've spent many years observing elephants firsthand, their ideas have totally changed. In fact, one of them said to me one day, "Madame, these aren't elephants, these are people." And I felt it was very touching for me to hear that.
A man with a machete follows two camouflage-suited guards into the forest.
Sadly, local opinions are increasingly affected by bigger changes sweeping across the region.
They cross a precarious wooden-planked bridge.
Andrea's seeing more and more elephants entering the Bai. She She thinks they're being pushed into Zanga, as commercial logging disrupts their extensive network of paths.
The men continue along a broad path through the forest.
What's more, ivory is back in demand. And the tusks of forest elephants are most sought after. They are pinker and much denser than those of savanna elephants, resulting in a rose ivory that's highly prized for carving. Its value is astronomical. A pair of tusks raises $90,000 on the black market.
Two of the guards are carrying rifles.
It's no wonder some local people get drawn into poaching. It's the easiest place to find and kill forest elephants. Unless, of course, Andrea is there.
I will react immediately to any threat. I can be out at the clearing having a nice afternoon, and then I hear a gunshot, and I'm gone. I'm back to camp on the radio, trying to get guards motivated.
In many ways, Andrea is the only person standing between the elephants and mass slaughter. After years of wanting to be here, she now dare not leave.
A ramshackle apex-roofed hut acts as a guard post.
With the stakes becoming higher, even Andrea cannot live in such remote forest without protection.
Lying on her back, Andrea reads by candlelight.
She needs to share the weight of responsibility. And a chance has come.
She blows out the candle, soaring over the bay in daylight.
She's been asked to help with a pioneering study at the other end of the elephant's range. It means, for a few weeks, she will have to leave the elephants at Zanga Bay.
An expanse of green rainforest stretches to the distant horizon.
Forest elephants inhabit a huge area stretching over 2 million square miles. But there could be fewer than 125,000 left.
Flying over a broad river, then waves crashing onto a wide beach at sunset, deserted but for a solitary wildebeest.
This is Gabon.
The wildebeest trots up the beach,
where the African rainforest meets the ocean. It's considered to be one of the last safe havens for forest elephants.
A flock of red-breasted birds.
It couldn't look more different from Zanga.
An elephant treads through lush grass.
Beyond the endless beaches, there's a mosaic of savanna, forest, and swamp.
Andrea's on a boat heading up a river.
It's a new experience for Andrea.
She catches a glimpse of an elephant on a bank.
She's used to seeing groups of over 100 elephants together. Here, just seeing one is a challenge.
You don't see many, but when you do see them, they're doing extraordinary things that I've never seen before in my life.
An elephant slips into water and starts to swim, its head, back, and end of its trunk, the only parts of its body visible above the surface. With the rest of its trunk submerged, the curling tip appears detached from the elephant's body.
Elephants have adapted to this diverse range of habitats, even snorkeling across flooded channels and swamps.
This place gives me a lot of hope in terms of elephant conservation, just because the elephants aren't accessible. People can't hunt in these swamps, and so that is a refuge for them.
However, there's no clearing like Zanga to see elephants and monitor what they do. Researchers have had to find a different way to tune into their lives.
A bespectacled man carrying a large backpack.
You can put one somewhere around here.
Andrea's joined Peter Regg from the Elephant Listening Project at Cornell University. He's an expert in acoustic research, something he hopes will reveal more about forest elephants.
So this is the hard drive
yeah.
to store the data. And then this is the computer, microcomputer,
okay.
that's actually processing the sound.
He's putting up remote listening devices to eavesdrop on them. But he needs Andrea's help because only she can translate their calls.
We're still in kindergarten in learning exactly what their vocalizations mean and the social context in which they occur. And this is where Andrea is so vital to what we're doing now, is that she knows the behavior of the elephants very, very well.
These recording units contain state-of-the-art microphones, specially designed to pick up low-frequency calls.
Two plastic crates are hoisted up into a tree.
They can be left running for 3 months, 24 hours a day. Each one records rumbles from over a square mile of jungle. It's better than CCTV.
Yes, okay, so we're finished, ready to go.
Attached to the crates is a large furry microphone sheath.
Peter already has 33 of these bugging devices deployed in the rainforests of Central Africa. Now, he needs Andrea's help to decode the latest recordings.
An elephant's cry is depicted as a waveform on a computer screen.
That's pretty deep.
Mm-hmm.
The different rumbles tell Andrea how many elephants are present and what they're doing.
Okay, that for me, this first call, may be an adult female. And this might be a response to that call.
Try this one then. This is young animal again.
Young animal.
Just by listening, she can tell which members of the family may be vocalizing and why.
Would you call those all protest calls? Or you said also sometimes
no,
they just
No, I think
get
they're lost
separated.
Calls. Lost I think they're separated.
So you're actually hearing a difference between a protest and a loss.
Yes. Those sound like, to me, lost calls.
Mm-hmm.
It starts low and it goes up. The structure looks the same.
Yeah, well, that's one of the problems, is I need to know a little more from your ear.
Mm-hmm.
What do I need to be looking for to make that distinction?
Mm-hmm.
Andrea's knowledge will help Peter create a visual record of specific elephant calls. He can then refer to this library and learn even more about elephant life here.
You don't have anything before that, do you?
Probably.
Recorded? Did you
no.
clip it
oh,
out?
No, I'm sure I do. This is clipped out, though. I mean,
it
we can go back and look.
It almost sounds like mating.
Really?
Yeah, because you've got a lot of these high-pitched things going in.
Huh.
Without even seeing elephants, it's possible to translate their rumbles into information about breeding success.
An elephant plods through thick undergrowth.
They've also revealed the dangers elephants face.
A family of elephants heads into the open.
Before his study began, Peter was told there was no poaching in the area. That's not the case.
These, I'm pretty sure, are high-powered rifle shots.
Black lines on the waveform.
So these devices also spy on the poachers. By pinpointing hotspots of illegal hunting, guards could target areas more strategically and efficiently.
A lot of frogs.
Mm-hmm. Those are definitely hounds.
Yeah. I'm very concerned, actually, about the huge knowledge that Andrea has about these elephants. I find it phenomenal what she remembers. No one else comes anywhere close to what she has. So I think it is critical that we basically kind of extract this information from her brain.
This experience has shown Andrea how her knowledge could help elephants across their whole range. But she will always feel a strong connection to the individuals back at Zanga that have been her life for so long.
I probably think about these elephants during my waking hours about 90% of the time.
I'm very concerned about them. I mean, I feel it's my moral responsibility to be there. Hopefully, when I get back, you know, the numbers will be the numbers I'm expecting to see.
When Andrea returns to Zanga, there's depressing news. More poaching has been reported in the area. The demand for ivory is now threatening the very existence of forest elephants.
An elephant raises its trunk as it emits a low rumbling cry.
Recent data has shown we've maybe lost between 40 and 50% of the population in the Central Africa area. So there's increasing pressure on this area where there are still animals left over.
Zanga Bay continues to be a magnet for forest elephants and a privileged window into their lives.
Andrea scans the Bay through binoculars.
That's Barney. There's a new calf.
A baby elephant follows its mother through the muddy shallows.
For the next 60 years, this calf could return time after time to take the salts, meet up with family, and to find a mate.
That's nice. That's a new baby for today.
He's trying to figure out what to do with his trunk.
It swirls the end of its trunk around uncomprehendingly in the water.
But if Andrea were to leave, who knows what upheavals he and his family would face.
A large adult elephant withdraws its trunk slowly from a pool's depths and splashes its body with water.
I'm not an optimist about the future for animals here. So, I mean, I get a little bit emotional about it. But the reality is, these animals, if they're not protected, they're going to be poached.
An adolescent rubs the base of its trunk with its foot.
For two decades, she has carried this responsibility on her shoulders. But she cannot stay here forever.
I've been here for 20 years and I'm beginning to feel my age. I think I'll stay here as long as I can walk and I can get support to do what I do. Because I love this place. I mean, there's a lot of downsides to my job, but coming here every day is what makes it all worthwhile, and just seeing them right here.
Maybe the pioneering study in Gabon will eventually take the pressure off her. And the remote listening devices will become her ears in the forest, allowing elephants to tell us of the dangers they face as they continue their conversations through the jungle.